Is that right? Oh, there we go. I'm alive. Great. Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. And it's lovely to be back here again. I always think of it as a privilege to speak anywhere, but especially coming here where we come along as a family. So I hope there'll be something useful this morning. This is a theme, living in God's presence, linked with Psalm 139, something I feel quite strongly about, because my life experience has shown me that God is everywhere. That doesn't matter where you go, you can bump into him. Sometimes it's just a matter of tuning in, isn't it? And I guess what church is about often is we come in here after all our cluttered week or even cluttered morning or even cluttered journey to church, and we start to tune in again. We're getting like that radio, aren't we, or the Wi-Fi, whatever. We're tuning in. We're switching it on, and we're saying, hang on, God, what is going on? Who are you? What are you saying to us? You know, those kind of things. But he's no more in here than anywhere else. See, it's just that we're helped. It helps us to come here and tune in. So we're just going to think of a few things around the psalm this morning. And if there's anything perhaps that might, I don't know, help some people to take away, those three things there, I think, that God made us, he's with us, and vitally he understands. I was just thinking there when I was hearing the psalm read, problem with the psalms is they all go so well, don't they? And then you get that verse. Oh God, I hate those people. Would you kill them for me? And it's just a reminder, isn't it, that it's all a part of worship. We bring everything. All our mixed up kind of joy, frustration, pleasure, anger. We can bring it all as part of our worship. It's nothing's off limits to God, really. But it made me think again when I heard that little bit towards the end. So this is a bit of it, really. Oh Lord, you've examined me. I'm not going to read it all through because you've just heard it all read, really. But it's an amazing psalm about God understanding and God wiring us up, you know, that sort of thing, really. That, you know, this idea that, yeah, we do come before God and we do get cleansed and we do get refreshed and renewed, but God understands us all the time when we're not feeling very holy and we're not feeling very Christian. You know, God understands why we do things, why we do certain things, and we react in certain ways that we don't understand often, really. Now, if you're a fish, it's best not to try riding a bicycle. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase. It's something I hang on to quite a lot. Because if I go back to the passage, one of the things this is saying is that God made you and I and made us to do certain things. And the worst thing we can do is look at other people and think, that's what I should be like. Then I would be more Christian. Then I'll be more, you know, what God wants me to be. And the point is, you're made of fish or whatever you are. And it's no good looking at someone else riding a bike and thinking, that I wish I could do that. Because fish won't last long if they're trying to ride a bike, will they? And I've done that myself a lot. I've tried to ride, you know, the equivalent of other people's bicycles or whatever, and fallen off and come a cropper, really. So that's one thing I'd love to leave you with, that image. You know that God has made you, you. And that's hard for us. Not least because when you look at other people, I mean, as we were reminded, that little prayer we had about the, you know, praying for the new minister, you know, what God sees is the whole of a person. What we look around this morning and see is the outside. I've done my best this morning. Not that good, really. But I'm trying to look like I'm a nice person and a good speaker on the outside. But what God's interested in is what I'm going to bring out of me. You know, and it's the same for all of us, isn't it? That we're the whole people. So it's not very helpful to look at the outside of people and think, I always wish I was like them, because we don't know what's going on. We never know what is going on inside of people, really, do we? And yet we are given to just looking at that, really. I've often used the phrase that we're wired up by God. You know, whatever you think about creation and about the way it happened and the way it continues to happen, because there are all kinds of takes on it now that we know a lot more about science, I'm absolutely convinced that the bottom line is that people are designed by God and that he loves that. And we, again, sometimes when we look at what is held up in society to be good, we look at it and we think, I'm far short of that. But that's where the Bible is so good at bringing us back to the bottom line about God making us and designing us and wiring us up, really. And sometimes you may be one of those people who's always feeling like you're a misfit. And God's going, exactly, that you are someone who can only say that. You are someone who can only see life in that way. That's what I want. And he understands that it's painful and that it's difficult. But he says, you know, I made you in that way to bring your perspective, to bring your kind of take on it. And I'm sure probably most of the Old Testament prophets were misfits, really. Probably that's why they stuck out, you know, and why they were able to write what they write and see what they saw, because they saw life differently. And they probably went to a party and left early because no one would talk to them, you know. They're those sorts of people, I'm sure they were. And they were probably weird and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, Ezekiel, I love, is definitely an artist. I'm not saying artists are weird, by the way. I'm an artist myself. But, and I am weird. But, you know, Ezekiel clearly was. Don't know if you ever read his book. It's brilliant. Okay. He does things like this. He does model making, hair cutting, cookery, DIY, mime, storytelling, nakedness. I could go on, but that's a good place to stop. He does all of those things in his way of communicating about God and the way he sees God, and he wants other people to get a glimpse of it. He uses all this creative stuff, really. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons why I particularly do like him. Talking about people not fitting in, this is a guy called Reverend Richard Coles. Now, I don't know if anyone watches Strictly Paint Drying. I mean, sorry, Come Dancing. Guess what? I'm a fan, aren't I? But I think he's on it at the moment, isn't he? He used to be in a band called the Communards. If anyone remembers Don't Leave Me This Way or something like that, I think they sang, and others. And he was the keyboard player. And then he had an amazing conversion experience, actually, quite an extraordinary conversion experience. He'd been on drugs for 3 days, and he woke up on a tube train with blood running out of his nose. He didn't know where he was, and he went along to a church, and he had this real moment, actually, where simply they rang a bell. It was a high church, and they rang the bell when they lifted up the bread, you know, the body of Jesus. And he just, God just hit him, and he fell down into his seat crying. And everyone was wondering what on earth was going on with this guy who's wearing this bright orange puffer jacket and looking a real mess. But that was the start of it for him. But he did a great interview a couple of years ago at Christmas time with Firm Britain here, where he talked about his faith and aspects of his faith. So I thought I would show you this, because early when it starts, he talks about feeling a misfit. And he reflects on some of that now, and also he gives this lovely description of what knowing Jesus means to him, really. So hopefully the technology will work. Have a listen, look at this.
So all that time ago, when you were a young boy, not feeling that you fitted in anywhere, being the outsider, you've gone through this enormous life full of exotic chapters. But do you now finally find that you've come home?
No, not really. I mean, I think there's a lovely phrase once about Christianity as being a home for the homeless. I mean, I think I'm just as awkward and as angled as ever I was, but I don't feel that I'm on the outside in that. I think I'm just along with everybody. Of course, as you go through life, you discover that the idea that somehow everybody else was feeling entirely at ease with themselves around you, not the case.
Yeah. How do you picture or feel God and Jesus? How do they come to you?
I think what I get is a desolation of darkness, the end of human hopes, the triumph of evil, and there's the cross, and Jesus on the cross dies on the cross for us, and then all of a sudden behind it, completely unexpectedly, dawn breaks, and there's a whole landscape there you never really saw before. You might have intimated it, but you never knew it was there, and the light rises. And all of a sudden you see that that has opened a way into it for you, and that you could step forward into this new reality. And it doesn't deny any of the stuff that's behind you. It doesn't say any of that wasn't real and wasn't powerful. And you'll continue to find in life that there's no get-out-of-jail-free card. You will always run into what it is to be human, and that can sometimes be dark and awful. But it does nothing to take anything from the light that spreads across this landscape. The new world, a transformed life for you. And you walk into that, and it's like waking up into the most wonderful reality. On a good day. On a bad day, you feel that you're left more of you in the dark than you thought you did.
Christmas, of course.
I don't know if you caught all of that, because he talks quite quietly, but he talked about a new dawn, didn't he? You know, recognizing the evil and then the cross, what that has done, and this breaking into your life of a new dawn, which may be what some of us, you know, need to grab again this morning, really. But also, when he talked about, you know, Christianity being a home for the homeless, you can be a part of the body, but still you are someone who doesn't, like he says, he just still doesn't feel like he quite fits in. He is someone who doesn't belong to the crowd, but he is following Jesus, and he brings all that he is into that, really. I came across this quote recently. Those who appear the most sanctified are the worst. Don't know if you can think of who said that. It was Elizabeth I, believe it or not. And now it's tempting to think that when we're being really Christian, we are more in God's presence. God is closer to us when we perceive ourselves to be more Christian. But I think we're always living in God's presence, whatever, always. I'll give you a couple of quick examples of that. I met a guy not too long ago who told me about his conversion. And what had happened was a friend was telling him about Jesus. He was thinking about it for quite a while. He was wondering, should he, shouldn't he? He was driving along one day in his car. He turned on the radio. And there's a band called REO Speedwagon, who did a song called Can't Fight the Feeling Anymore. He switched that on. Well, the song came on, and he heard that line, and he thought, all right, God, I give in. Sometimes just through a song on the radio, God's presence is going to hit you. And that's what it was for him, really. You know, my wife Lynn, she went to see a film called The Doors years ago, 18 rated movie full of sex, drugs and rock and roll. She was watching the film. She thought, I wonder if there's any more to life than this. And that was a really significant moment. It was like God began to open a door inside of her, because he was in the cinema watching The Doors as well, apparently. But he was right there, and his presence touched her at that moment through that, you know, her watching that film. So you never know. You never know when God's presence is going to suddenly come close to you. Here's some biblical stuff that I really like. I mean, Jesus makes this promise, you know, I'm with you to the end of the age. You know, everywhere. I'm all over the place. Jacob, but this is one I really like. Jacob's running away from his family, from his God, and from himself, really, and certainly from his brother who wants to kill him. He's in a really bad place. He's the original prodigal son. He's running away. He goes to sleep one night, and he has a vision, the famous vision of the angels and going up and down the ladder. When you see angels, by the way, in biblical terms, it always signifies the presence of God. Angels don't exist on their own. I know people in general like to think of having a helpful angel. Angels biblically always show you that God is present, okay? So he sees this vision. He wakes up, and this is what he says. Surely God was in this place. I didn't realize it. He basically thought he was in a God-forsaken place, both geographically and emotionally. You know, he thought he'd been completely abandoned by God. And he says, guess what? I just discovered God was here, and I've never realized it. So I love that little story, because that is a reminder often to me that God is often in the places. And then you get Joshua being told, you know, be strong, be brave, don't be afraid or discouraged, because God is with you wherever you go. Interesting thing that, isn't it? Or it also means, or in all you do. But it isn't, the message isn't the Disney message. Disney films will tell you, you can do anything, just believe. That's not the message of the Bible. Be determined and confident, because you're a great person. Well, you're a loved person, but be determined and confident, because God is with you. No other reason. Not because you can achieve anything if you believe it. You might achieve anything if you believe that God has led you to do it, but that's another story, isn't it? But God is with you, so don't be crushed. Don't be crushed, because God is with you. This is another bit from the psalm that I just wanted to draw on, really. The way that we can never get away from God's presence. And I've got a couple of dramatic stories that I thought I'd just tell you about. But I might have mentioned this last time I spoke, so apologies if I'm repeating this a little bit. But one of the bits of the Bible that has recently really come alive to me is in Song of Songs. Now, Song of Songs is, you know, an 18-rated book, really, if you know everything that's going on in there. I don't know if you know about Song of Songs, but it's a love poem, and it's pretty spicy, really. But there are moments in it where it's like there are, you know, in amongst all the carnal stuff, let's say, there are images where God, you know, just is really speaking to people, saying, do you know what? I really care about you. I think you're brilliant, and I made you. And one of the ones is, it's chapter 2, verse 14. And the image is this, that we hide behind our rocks. You know, we hide away. And we all do it. I do it. And the message is, come out from behind the rock, because I love your face. And I love your voice. Come out from behind your rocks. I love that face of yours. And I love your voice. Because he made them. And we may not. We may wish we sounded like someone else or looked like someone else. But that isn't God's perspective. Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 14, if you want to look it up. Don't read the other verses. No, you can. But it is a great, you know, for me, I come back to that again and again and again. It always flicks a switch in here that that is God's message, you know, that he, at the moment for me. So, you know, I just want to tell you a couple of stories about God not being afraid of the dark, really, which is a phrase that I like to use. There's a guy called Philip Yancey. He wrote a book, Finding God in Unexpected Places. And it was lots of stories where of this kind of thing, you know, people unexpectedly encountering God. And one of them, a journalist friend of his, wanted to know if he could go to the one of the worst places, find a really bad place on earth, and see if there was any sign of God at all. So he heard about this prison in an African country. I'm sorry, I can't remember which country. But it was a prison within a prison where they put the worst people, you know, and there was terrible conditions, but they just basically threw them in there and forgot away the, and forgot the key, you know, threw away the key, forgot about them. So he persuades someone to take him to this prison, and they open it up, and when he goes in, the first thing he sees on the back wall is a mural of the crucifixion. The first thing that hits him in this prison, this dark place. And then as immediately some of the prisoners got together and they sang this gospel song. They formed this little makeshift scratch choir and they sang a gospel song. You know, goodness knows what else was going on in that dark prison, but God was certainly very evident there, really. And I just want to tell you this other quote, this other story. It comes from the First World War. Someone lent me a book called God and the British Soldier, which is far more inspiring than it might sound, actually, because I thought it was going to be quite a heavy-going book. But it was all about, really, how soldiers had encountered God in lots of places. And this quote was in it. I used to sit and think quite deeply about God, and I felt perfectly certain that he existed, you see. And one very often felt something behind one. And I suppose the philosophy was this, that after all, it was a very nice world to live in. If we choose to muck it up, that's our fault. That was a British soldier who was on what was called the firing step in the trenches in the First World War. So he was there watching out for any snipers or anything happening. He used to sit there for ages. I guess soldiers did that. And his perception in that terrible place of body parts and mud and blood and gore was that actually God was, you know, God was very real and very present with him in that darkness. And there were lots of other stories, people having visions in the trenches. I know overall the perception is that a lot of men came back from the First World War having lost their faith, and I'm sure that's true. But there were certainly many who came back having found faith in that darkness as well, really. So we just never know, you know, when, like I say, when we will bump into God. And in Psalm 139 it says, even in the darkness you are there. And it says more than that, actually. It says, you will guide me. You will continue to guide me. You know, and I know that story for myself, really, when I've been in really difficult places or places I would think, you know, God was never going to be with me. I got a sense of his guidance going on when I was falling apart. I haven't got time to go into it now, but I went through quite a long period where I drank a lot, for example. And yet I got this sense that God never gave up on me at all in that time. Because he understands sometimes what makes us fall apart. And he understands what we're hungry for, really. And actually that's what he wants to, you know, tap into, doesn't he? He wants to show us that he is what we need, not all these other things we might go looking for, really. Again, I'm just a bit more of the psalm here, but, you know, talking again about him being created by him, being put together in our mother's womb, him seeing us before we were born, you know. And, I mean, and you can read all this stuff negatively or positively because you can think, oh, I'm a terrible person. Oh, and God knows I'm a terrible person. That, I don't think what this psalm is about at all. It's a psalm of celebration, isn't it? Saying, you know, this is the God who knows every little thing about you and wants to work with you, show you his love, bring you out from behind those rocks, all those kind of things, really. And I do, you know, that line there, how precious are your thoughts about me, God? That's an interesting line, isn't it? God always thinking about you, and his thoughts are precious. That's quite something, isn't it, really? So I think I'll just close with a couple of things. This is a bit of comedy, really, but it comes back to that whole thing about wanting to be somebody else. This is a guy who's doesn't feel he's a great dad. The film is called Vacation. I think it's not a great film, really, but it's a couple of good moments. He wants to be a better dad, so decides to take his family on this incredible holiday, and he hires a car to take him on the holiday. And he's showing them the car, and then there's another clip about him trying to drive like Vin Diesel, if you know him. He's a movie star in lots of car movies. So he wants to be like that. So I'll show you these couple of clips and then just say another couple of things, really.
Look what your dad rented. That's a 2015 Tartan Prancer.
Did you say Tartan, honey?
Yeah, Tartan's the Honda of Albania. But this baby is pretty sweet. It's got all the latest Albanian technology. Check it out. Plug-in hybrid.
Oh, wow. Eco-friendly. Good.
So anytime we run out of juice, we can just pull right over and plug in. I don't know what that is.
I've never seen an outlet for that.
This is my favorite part. Slam the door on my arm.
What?
It has a sensor. It won't let you slam the door on your arm or leg.
Honey, I'm not doing that.
The rental guy showed me. Just do it.
Okay.
Do it. Do it.
Kind of fun.
Slam it.
All right. There you go.
Oh!
Oh, my God!
Oh!
Oh, my God!
God, oh, damn it!
Oh, my God! Why did you have me do that?
Well, I didn't have the sensor activated.
Okay.
I'm an idiot. Do it again.
No, absolutely not.
Come on, it'll be fine. I just activated it.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Don't be chicken.
Fine.
Why did you do that?
Really?
Baby, I compare you to a kiss from a rose on the grave. I can't believe no one in this family wants to sing. Jared Fields, yeah. Batman Forever? That your roses in bloom. Val Kilmer. I hate the gloom on the grave.
He's come back to kill us. You gotta go faster, Dad, go faster.
The printer doesn't go any faster.
Okay, well, what are we gonna do?
I have an idea.
What?
Handbrake turn.
What?
I pull the wheel to the left, yank the handbrake, we do a 180, cross the median, drive right past it.
You know how to do that, Dad?
If Vin Diesel can do it, so can I.
Why are you as good as Vin Diesel?
Hang on!
I don't know if you caught it, but the key line really is when his wife says to him, "Why do you want to be Vin Diesel?" You know. I recently heard a comedian, and he was saying about a real story where he'd met a guy who was 95, and he'd want to find out what he wanted to ask him about that, find out what his life was like at 95. And he said to him, "What is the best thing about your age?" And that without missing a beat, the guy said, "No peer pressure." We can think of peer pressure as being a particularly teenage thing, can't we? But my experience is it goes on all your life, really. And, you know, we feel a pressure from advertising and from others, perhaps, to be something or do something, as this guy does, really. But that is what this psalm is saying. Don't give in to that. Don't give in. Find out who you are in God and grow in that, really. I'm just going to finish again with that quote. You know, and the thought that really, you know, whether you're like Victor Meldrew at the moment feeling unhappy, whether you're like these guys feeling over the moon, or whether you're somewhere in the middle, or whether you're brokenhearted, or whether you're just discovering God, wherever you are, you know, he made you, he's with you, and he understands you. So I'll just say a little prayer on the back of that. Then. Lord, thank you that these words were recorded thousands of years ago, and they still stand the test of time. But Lord, would you get them off the page, please, for us, into our hearts and our minds and our wills, so that, Lord, they don't just nurture us for today, but they get into our being and our living. Lord, help us. Help anyone here at the moment who's particularly struggling with accepting themselves and seeing that you have made them. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.